Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It's a three-man booth today. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester, Paul Savage with you on this Thursday. And we are, we are excited to be here. It's a little nervous morning, I think. Royals baseball fresh on everybody's brain, now facing elimination. We'll get into all of that, of course, look ahead to Game 4 tonight after we look back to Game 3 last night. We'll have that for you coming up on the program today. Bottom of this hour, PJ Glasser, our betting insider, will join the show. We'll talk some football bets. We'll look ahead to the weekend, look ahead to Thursday night football tonight, see if he has any angles, perhaps, on these baseball playoffs. We'll have Tim Fitzgerald, buddy from GoPowerCat.com, joining us. Top of the second hour to look ahead to what should be one of the real premier games of the week, quite honestly. You've got Prime, the late-night window, K-State. Didn't go well in that late-night window the last time they were out there, so we'll talk to Fitz about everything going on there as well. We'll give you some Wichita Thunder hockey tickets in the program today. We'll give you some HTO in the program today in our Text to Win contest. All that for you. You can chime in on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. You can get in touch with the program through our video streams, 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X. You can leave us your voice messages on the Odyssey app, which is real easy. You just go inside the app there. You click a little microphone, and then you leave us a message and move on with your day, and we'll get to it. Jad gets those, and we'll take them over the air. Fellas, good morning.
Good to see you today, Paul. Good to be in with you. Well, Jacob, good to see you. It's been a couple of days, so glad to be back, and good to be here today.
Well, it's just, I just can't believe I'm in with two studs like you two.
Okay. Thank you
many
for that.
Many say it.
Oh, many say it. That's right.
Fellas, it's a nerve-wracking day. It's an elimination day in the postseason. Those never are fun. It's a lot more fun when you're on the other side of it. But the Royals just couldn't get it done last night. Mm-hmm. Giancarlo Stanton continues to be one of the better postseason hitters of this generation, and he gets a couple of big hits that put the Royals on the ropes. We can dissect this one, and we will. I really wish Bobby Witt Jr. would have stole that base late in the game or tried to. And then, of course, Salvador Perez singles. That would have been the game-tying run. I was a little surprised they didn't run there. I didn't have real issue with anything else Cotrero did in the game. Yankees were just one run better. You know, I think we're probably a whole lot more nervous and worried about this as the followers of this team than the team probably is. My guess is they're feeling okay. Didn't go their way, but they got to Gerrit Cole last time. I don't know. I guess initial reactions here. It's just a good baseball game, and it was tough. And it was, Tommy, it was just you got to bounce right back here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the really the biggest thing outside of Giancarlo Stanton and the big offensive game he had was really the amount of batters that the Royals walked in the course of the game.
Nine.
I mean, that was crazy. And they've done that a couple of other times over the course of this series against the Yankees. And I understand that you have to pitch some of those guys really, really carefully. You're almost pitching defensively, like Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, Stanton, others in that lineup. You've got to be really careful with the pitches that you're making with them. But far too many base runners. The fact that, really there were only four hits in the game, three of them coming off the bat of Giancarlo Stanton, I mean, tells you that as far as bat to ball, the Royals pitched decently well over the course of the game with all of the pitchers that they brought out there. It was just the number of walks they had. And I think that was really, obviously outside of the home run that broke the game open for the Yankees in the eighth inning, it was the walks. And that's something that they're going to have to focus on in tonight's game. You can't afford to have that many runners on base with a team like the Yankees who can drive in runs, basically better than any other team in Major League Baseball.
Right. Well, Tommy hit upon the key to this game. Nine walks, a lot of walks. But fellas, if I was to say to you before this game was played that the Royals hold the Yankees to four hits, what are their chances of success?
I think pretty high.
I think pretty high, as well. I believe that would be the correct answer. So, you know, you four hits and you still end up winning the game 3-2. You know, it makes me think to myself, what a lost opportunity. And Tommy, I'm so disappointed. I know you were I believe in business meetings and that kind of thing, because you're an important guy and you run this place. It's really tough for me to, you know, put myself in your shoes when you look at this particular game. But I honestly believe that when we look at this game, we're going to see a chance that we could have, when I say we, the Royals could have swept this thing in two games at home, swept the two games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that's fair.
Well,
the Yankees are good for a reason.
Jacob,
I think,
I let
you know, the walks
think
have,
it.
The walks have been a problem. I do think you're right, Tommy. I think some of it, there is design. You're not trying to walk people, but they're clearly trying to make sure they don't give Yankees pitches to hit home runs.
Well, they're pitching around, you know, some of these guys. And even the home run against Stanton, you know, Bubich is throwing multiple breaking balls.
Yeah.
And really, I think it was the inning before when Brady Singer was in and Aaron Judge was up. And Singer got Judge to 0-2. And then just like that, it was a 3-2 full count, you know, because he's not giving him anything to hit.
And you can't.
That's the thing. Like, I'm not criticizing the game plan from the Royals.
Yeah, no. I know. That's why I'm saying it's not fair, yeah. I don't think, to Paul's point, to just say, they should have won all three of those games. The Yankees have something to say about that,
we
too.
And
they make that hard on you,
I know,
to do it. I think if, you know, if there's been a disappointing part of this series, walks are disappointing and infuriating and make you want to pull your hair out, but you can see some of the reasoning why it would be higher than normal. It's that the offense hasn't been there enough to me. Vinny Pasquantino, I would probably, with my back against the wall, if I'm Cotrero, move him down in the lineup today. I wouldn't take him out of the lineup, but I'd probably move him down in the lineup. And, you know, something, because the reality is the pitchers haven't had a chance. I don't think, I don't remember a time in this series where the Royals have been ahead enough to be aggressive pitching. They have to be on eggshells pitching because every game is within a run or a tie game. You know, that's just the way this series has gone. So you can't let them, you can't just attack the Yankees lineup. They'll hit a bunch of home runs. That's what they do. So I get it on both sides. The offense is what's going to have to bail them out. You've got Waka and Cole again. Like, do you really think they're going to be as successful against Cole the second time around? I hope so. But, you know, the law of averages says they won't be. They're going to have to really take advantage with some timely hitting.
But don't you think also that, you know, you mentioned the pitching not really being able to be aggressive and go after batters for good reason, and I agree with that. But I think in the same vein, that carries over offensively. It carries over to the entire game plan for Kansas City because, like, at the very top of this, you said you really wished that Bobby Witt Jr. had stolen that base in the eighth inning. And I agree, in retrospect, you know, hindsight 2020, had he been in scoring position, Salvi would have been able to drive him in.
I thought that before the Salvi single.
I get it, but that's, like, if you're going to be defensive pitching, and that clearly was the game plan, it's been the game plan for the Royals, you've got to be a little defensive, even on the base paths as well. Like, I think that defensive mindset has extended to all facets of the game for Kansas City in this series. They weren't going to risk Witt getting thrown out at second base and not even getting a chance to drive him
in. It's a tough call. It's tough with Gurriel, who's been so effective behind Salvi. I do understand why you don't run. I was just hoping before the fact, especially when they try, I believe that they threw over to first on the first, before he even threw the first pitch to Salvi.
They did.
That opens the door a little bit more.
Look, Bobby's a great base dealer, and so I don't have an issue with him running.
He's a reckless base runner, though. He's a reckless base runner.
Yeah, really, in, like, general, if this was a random, you know, game in Kansas City in the month of July, Bobby's off. Like, Bobby's going to second.
Well, sure.
He's stealing that base, and Salvi's driving him in. But in game three of the ALDS against the Yankees, when base running, you know, has been kind of at a premium for Kansas City, and not just that, but Bobby Witt Jr., that was his first hit of the entire series.
Right.
You want to be careful with him, especially if the entire mindset has been defensive pitching, pitching around the Yankees lineup and all of that. You're going to be a little bit more careful everywhere in that game.
I think it was, don't misunderstand, it wasn't like a no-brainer, I can't believe they didn't do it. It was a, man, I was really hoping when he got to first they would do it. Just because it was the eighth inning. If it was the first inning, hell no. Don't send him.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to potentially ruin a good thing brewing. That point in the game, though, like, desperation sets in. The Royals have always been historically an effective team. When you push, they get hyper aggressive. Now, I don't know if you can do that from a pitching standpoint. A lot of Lugo's walks, by the way, I think he was just, for whatever reason, he kind of broke. He late in his start, he lost his control. But I will say that, and we'll get into game four when we come back. I would say you got to take the glove. You be old school 2014, yeah, 15 Royals tonight, and you just get after it on the base. Any opportunity you get to put the pressure on the Yankees, you put the pressure on the Yankees.
That's what I was about to say, and we'll talk about it more in the next segment, that if you were a little bit defensive or conservative or whatever word you want to call it in game three, you can't do that tonight. Your back is up against the wall. Yep. You've got to just let it all hang out, be aggressive, do whatever you need to do.
With Cole on the mound,
yeah,
on the other
100%.
Side. All right, 869-1240, chime in, leave us your comments, leave us your voicemails. You can call the show. We'll talk a little betting coming up at the bottom hour. Three-man booth today. Albrock, Caster, Savage, Jad Chambers producing. It is Sports Daily. We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up after a late night of baseball. We'll come back. We'll look ahead briefly to game four when we return.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Royals are in the Major League Baseball playoffs, and it's available for free right here on KFH and the Odyssey app. Tune in tonight, 6:30 coverage, as the Royals look to even that series against the Yankees and take it back to New York. You can simply download the Odyssey app if you don't have us over the air and search for KFH at game time. That's the goal tonight. Send it back to New York.
Good.
And you got to do it against one of the, you know, the best in the game, Gerrit Cole. The Royals got to him in the first game. The Yankees got to Michael Wacha in the first game. This is going to be, and I have not looked to see what Cotrero has said about this. I don't know if he'd tip his hand. I don't know if he said it very obviously, but I would think that this is a game you have to have Reagans on standby. Don't you think, Tommy? I believe he'd be on regular rest to pitch in this game. So, I think you absolutely don't worry about game five until you know you can get there. And if Wacha struggles at all, you got to look at bringing Reagans into this game.
Yeah, I think the only question then becomes, you know, if you do get to a game five, who starts that game? Is Lorenzen, could he do that? Or is Brady Singer, you know, available? I know that they both pitched in game three. So if that's the direction that you go with Reagans tonight, if you have to, then you've got to understand with your management of the rest of the pitchers who could be available in that game five. And I'm sure that, you know, probably in the back of Cuchero's mind, he's thinking, if we have to go to Reagans tonight, if something happens with Wacha, we have to put Reagans out there, then I know that I can't pitch Lorenzen or I can't pitch Singer tonight because I've got to rest them for a game five potentially. But I'm not against the idea of, if needed, to go to Reagans. I wonder, though, the only thing that I think about with this, and ultimately it's probably the right move to go ahead and continue to roll through your rotation the way that you have it set. But if Reagans is on regular rest tonight, why don't you just start him then? Like,
I thought the same thing.
You know what I mean?
I thought the same thing. Because if it's, let's, it's, he pitched. He, when did he pitch?
He pitched on Monday.
So it's not regular rest, but it'd be fourth day. So it'd be a day early, but I think you do it. Waka's on regular rest. I don't have a problem going with Wacha here. He's on regular rest. It's his spot. It saves, I get it, but I would have Reagans ready to pitch in this game. That's me. Cuchero knows his guys better than that. Maybe Reagans isn't equipped for that. He's also a guy who lost his command in game two. He's also a guy who had cramps in the last series. So maybe Cuchero thinks that's not a good idea. And I'm okay with that too.
Don't you think it's kind of the equivalent of in basketball when you've got that use it or lose it timeout? You know, if you don't use it before the half, you don't get it back. You know, so what I would hate to have happen is, and I don't know the conversations going on with the pitching staff and Brian Sweeney, the pitching coach, and all of that. If Reagan says that he's okay and he's ready to go and like he feels like he can get up and go for this game, he's your ace of the rotation. I would hate to leave him on the bench and not get to a game five. Right?
Yeah. I don't think you need, I don't think they need, because Waka has been fine. I don't think they need to pitch Reagan's on 4 day, you know, on 1 day shorter rest unless they need to, right? If they need to, if it's at any, like it's got to be a quick trigger to bring him out. The only thing is, like, has Reagan's done that? I'd have to really look back. I don't know if he's ever pitched on short rest, any of those things. We know that Waka, his last time out, the Yankees got to him to some degree, 3 runs over 4 innings. The Royals have been, Cuchero's really not liking his guys to get very deep into these games. He just, you know, he's more comfortable with the bullpen, and that's proven to be pretty effective. I don't think Waka's given them more than 3 or 4 anyway. If he does, that's going to be great news for the Royals, right? I think if Waka's pitching in the 5th inning of this game, it has been a really good start to the game for the Royals. I think that's the scenario, Paul, because Cuchero has shown us in this series, his trigger is much, much quicker than it ever was in the regular season, and he's going to yank him quickly if he has any indication Waka's not going to be able to get through this thing.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the right thing to do. You know, the one thing that strikes me in this series that we haven't brought up is the name Aaron Judge. I mean, this has been a pretty quiet series for Aaron Judge. He hadn't been a factor. And it makes me wonder, Tommy, I mean, you know, you go – baseball's baseball. You go 4 games and you're sitting there with – you can win out in New York on Friday night. And Aaron Judge, is he due? I mean, that's the one factor that we're not covering on this, because he has not been a factor in any of these games up to this point. It makes me wonder, is this his game? I mean, you know, this is just an added factor for me to worry about. And by the way, you guys are so lucky to get to watch this game on Friday. I can't watch the game.
It's Saturday night.
Oh, it's Saturday night.
You could
night.
Watch it.
Yeah, I could watch it.
Is it going to broadcast television Saturday if they – Not cable. Is that what you mean, Paul?
Well, I thought it was a Friday night game, but I mean,
yeah, he'll be on the sideline.
Oh,
on
for
Friday
football,
night.
For
football. That's right.
I had some people angry that it wasn't over the air on a, you know, some people don't have cable. I would say this to your point on Aaron Judge, Paul. Yes, he's due because he's Aaron Judge, but there's no history that tells us he's Giancarlo Stanton in the postseason. His career batting average in the postseason, this is over 47 postseason games, is .203. So he's kind of not far off of his career average, what he's doing. He's been bad this year, but he's never been a great postseason hitter. So yeah, could he be due? He also has 13 home runs in 47 games. So yes, he's on one hand, he's due, but on the other, their game plan for him has been right.
Yeah.
I think that he looks a lot like, and this might be the only time that this comparison is ever made. I think Aaron Judge, watching him in the batter's box over this series, looks a lot like the way Vinny Pasquantino looks in the batter's box. Like, they're pressing. I feel like they're both pressing. And it's for different reasons, right? Like, Aaron Judge is pressing because he's got the expectations to be the Yankees superstar, to be the one to have that defining moment. I mean, they've talked about it constantly on the broadcasts about Aaron Judge and his postseason moment, and it hasn't happened yet, and when is it going to happen? Pasquantino is pressing because he's coming off of an injury and he's trying to be effective for his team. So it's different. Totally different, but they're both pressing.
I think there's a difference in what Bob Costas wants for Aaron Judge and what Aaron Judge wants for Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think those are the same things.
But don't you think, I mean, I know, albeit different reasons, that both of these guys are pressing when they're up there to hit.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, they are. And I do think that the pressure is interesting because in reality, there is far less pressure on Judge internally because their lineup is more capable of picking him up. Pasquantino's pressure is very real. They need him in the middle of that lineup to be productive. They need it badly. That's why I would probably advocate, and I don't think this will happen, and I'm fine with it not happening. If I were in the chair, I would probably swap he and Gurriel in the lineup. Gurriel has been so effective in this series. So effective. He is clearly locked in. He was really good against Cole. I would swap them and try to do something to get those productive bats put together. Vinny just hasn't been there. And it reminds Vinny, to me, looks like he looked very early in this season, right? When he's not locked in, it's as Jekyll and Hyde as any player, I think. Like, Bobby Witt Jr. hasn't been productive, but he doesn't look, I don't know, I don't even know how to describe it.
Uncomfortable?
You don't,
I would say uncomfortable would be the word that I would use.
Yeah,
and I think that with Pasquantino, I remember saying at the very beginning of the playoffs when we found out he was being activated that I didn't even need him to be productive because just his presence in the lineup would make a difference. And I've come off of that now because
I think it was true in the Baltimore series.
But that was assuming that Bobby Witt Jr. was going to be able to have a productive series, and he hasn't really. I mean, he got his first hit of the series last night. So that only works if you've got the other pieces of the middle of that lineup hitting, and they're not right now to that level. At least Bobby Witt Jr. is not. So I wouldn't be opposed to a change in the lineup to try to get some kind of spark going for tonight, knowing that, you know, it's a make it or break it type situation.
I just think you have to leave it all on the table tonight. And obviously they will. It's an elimination game. I want to, in the second hour, we'll have PJ Glasser coming up next, talk a little football betting. I do want to have us guess at how much pressure we think they feel. Is that in their DNA to even feel pressure? Because I think that's interesting. I think it's important to what we think their chances are tonight, as we evaluate that game and guess at it. They're fairly large underdogs at home as baseball goes. So we'll get into that a little bit as we make our way through. When we come back, we'll look at some betting. We got Thursday night football. What does PJ Glasser think about K-State Colorado this weekend? And what are some of his other favorite bets? That's our betting insider. That's next on Sports Daily. Keep it here. We'll be right back.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody, as we get you rocking and rolling and ready for some football tonight and into the weekend, maybe a little baseball here as we welcome in our betting insider, PJ Glasser, on the line. It is the host of Send It In and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the Send It In podcast for more analysis. Just search Send It In wherever you find your podcast. PJ, topically speaking, folks around here are locked in and now concerned today, I would say, about the Royals. But I would also say this to you. They have been very fruitful this postseason because other than last night, they have been underdogs in every game, which means you get plus money. Do you think plus money tonight to send the series back to New York is a good way to look at it?
Yeah, I do. I would like the Royals tonight, guys. I think they get the job done. Their starting pitching pretty much all postseason has been really, really good. I thought Lugo had another good performance last night. Stanton just kind of had the big home run in the eighth inning to win that game. Gerrit Cole's on the mound tonight for the Yankees. This is why the Yankees gave Cole all that money a couple of years ago, was for games like this, moments like this, when you have a chance to close out a series and move on to the next round. But as you guys know, I mean, Waka has been really solid for Kansas City this season. And, you know, Bobby Witt hasn't really gotten going yet in this series. And you just figure it's only a matter of time until he kind of breaks out, has that big extra base hit to kind of get the Royals going. So I always thought the Royals would give the Yankees maybe a tougher series than a lot of people thought they would. I like them to send this back to New York for a decisive game five. So, yeah, I do like the Royals tonight at plus 125.
It's been a good bet all postseason for them, clearly, as they've been better than people expect. We'll see. Let's look at Thursday night football, PJ. You've got a fun one. It's a rivalry game. A lot of injuries on both sides of the ball for both teams. So when I look at this, and I know this is anti-Thursday night football over a large period of time, but look at last Thursday night football and what happened. I kind of, you know, this to me seems like a game where all your same game parlays, like player props, like I think the guys that do play are going to kind of pile it up a little bit in this game. I don't know if they're getting over 49 because that's a big number, but I like the Niners and I like a lot of the player props tonight.
It's an interesting game, guys. You know, Seattle's defense was one of the best in the NFL the first 3 weeks. And then these last couple weeks against the Lions, certainly on Monday night a couple weeks ago, and then against the Giants last week, just hasn't been as good. Jacob, you mentioned all the injuries that are in this game. Seattle's defense has their fair share, but their offense has been good. I think they'll be able to score in this game. San Francisco, I see the same kind of thing. So, look, the Niners are in an interesting spot in their season, right? They're 2-3. Tough divisional road game tonight against Seattle. And then, as you guys know, the following week, they play Kansas City in a Super Bowl rematch. So if they're not careful, I mean, they very easily could be 2-5 potentially. I think you're going to get a good performance out of the Niners. They won 5 straight against Seattle. It feels like the last couple of years, these games have always been in prime time as well. These Niners-Seahawks games in Seattle, they played on Thanksgiving. They played on Thursday night. Like, the Niners are used to going into Seattle in prime time, which, as we know, is one of the tougher environments to play at night. So they seem to handle that well. Purdy's played well there in the past. He's played really well this season. I think what you're seeing with San Francisco, guys, and why they're not able to close these games out late is because of the injury to McCaffrey. You know, when you don't have the best running back in football and you can't lean on him the final 5 minutes of a game, it's making it really tough for them to close out these games. So I don't know if I'd lay 3.5 just because it is a divisional game on the road. I like the Niners to win. I would take them on the money line at -190. And then I would maybe look at parlaying them with one of these other games on the NFL board, because I do like quite a few favorites this week in the NFL. And I think you can get some good money line options with the Niners and maybe one of these other teams to play on Sunday.
You know, PJ, Paul Savage here. Glad to have you on the show again. Hey, you know something? When I look at the roster of opportunities to make some money on, I like a game that others may look and say, boy, I'm not sure how to pick that. And I'm not sure I know how to pick it. But the Commanders and the Ravens looks to be an interesting game. First of all, you got probably – do I dare say after 4 or 5 games that the Commanders have maybe one of the most dynamic quarterbacks, maybe of the future? I don't know. Maybe so, maybe not. I don't know. But, man, how do you pick that game? Right now the Commanders are getting 6.5 points. Does that seem right to you? Because that seems extremely high to me, which kind of makes you want to make this bet, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's an interesting line, Paul. No doubt about it. Guys, I've been living in this area my whole life. I'm a Ravens fan. I've never seen so much excitement around the Commanders, so much excitement around this matchup. I mean, Nance and Romo, we know, are the number one CBS broadcast crew. They're doing this game on Sunday, which kind of tells you how well Daniels has been playing, how well the Commanders have been playing. I actually think this game's going to go one of two ways. I think the Commanders can win this game outright, or I think the Ravens are going to kill them, to be quite honest with you. Lamar Jackson is 21-1 against the NFC, guys. He's 21-1. You saw him beat Dallas earlier this season. You saw him dismantle the Niners last year. You saw him beat up on Seattle. You saw him beat up on Detroit. Like, this is what the Ravens do when they go up against NFC teams. The big reason is because Lamar is one of one. Like, his combination of speed and all the different things that they run, these NFC teams that see him once every 4 years, they don't know how to defend it. What makes this matchup so great, though, is that if there was anybody who's close to Lamar, it's the quarterback on the other team and Jaden Daniels, right? So both defenses practice against the guy that they're going to be seeing on the other side of the field on Sunday, which is why I actually like the under in this game.
Okay.
Because of both quarterbacks, both offenses, the way that they're playing right now, I think everybody naturally is just going to want to bet the over. Ravens have one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL. Commanders have one of the worst run defenses. But the fact that both quarterbacks have such a similar skill set, I actually think is going to help both defenses in this matchup. So it's a high total, guys. 52, 51.5. The under is the play that I like the best.
That's really interesting. And there is some history, right? When NFL games get into the 50s, because they never really go higher than what, like 53, 54
Yeah.
I know at one point there was a trend that those games can get over that, but you know, but yeah, I haven't thought about it that way. Boy, Daniels looks good. And he does look like Lamar. They're a lot alike. Around the NFL. So we don't have the Chiefs this week, certainly, which is, you know, which is not fun for us here, but there are a lot of good games. Another one featuring two teams people feel like are, you know, contenders. Lions Cowboys, another really high total as well. Cowboys, I am very surprised by this one. You can get the Cowboys plus money at home against the Lions. It feels like all those, you know, we remember when the Cowboys and all their lines seemed skewed and all that. I think that's all out the window. That's hard for me to even say out loud. That seems weird to me.
I mean, what's crazy, Jacob, and you know, as a Cowboys fan, I mean, they're 0-2 at home this season and they're 3-0 on the road. Usually the other way around. They're normally a great home team. I actually like Detroit in this game, you guys, for a couple reasons. The first one is they're coming off a bye week and they're going on the road. In the NFL, you always like taking teams that are coming off a bye and going on the road just because they're more focused, right? You're not dealing with like 2 weeks of being at home and dealing with all the chores and dealing with everything. You got to go on the road. You got to get on a plane. You got to lock in much quicker. But the revenge angle in this game, I think, is so important. If you guys remember when these two teams played last year towards the end of the regular season, the Lions got screwed when one of their offensive linemen, Dan Skipper, came in for a two-point conversion, and he told the official Brad Allen that he was eligible. He brushed across his chest, and he caught the touchdown, and the official said he was ineligible. Every time you watch a Lions game when they're at home and Dan Skipper checks in, there's always a mock cheer from the Detroit crowd because of that play. That play and that game has stuck with the Lions fans. It's stuck with the players. And now they finally get to go back to Dallas and make amends for that game last season. So I think Detroit has been wanting Dallas for a while. I think they use that extra week of prep for their bye to really make sure they're ready to go in this game. And look, Dallas still has injuries, right, to their defensive line. And when you're going up against the best offensive line in football and a Lions offense that looks like it maybe got it rolling when we saw them last against Seattle, I like Detroit, fellas. I would grab the -3 because I think this game closes at 3.5.
That's interesting. All right, what else on the NFL slate? What are some of your favorite plays on Sunday?
So, guys, my favorite bet, believe it or not, in the NFL this week is going to be the Carolina Panthers +6 against the Falcons. I think they have a chance to win this game outright. There are three reasons why I like Carolina so much. The first one is the matchup. Andy Dalton is one of those quarterbacks that when he doesn't get pressure, he's very good. And when he does get pressure, like we saw last week against Chicago, he's not very good. Atlanta's the second worst in the league in generating pressure. So I think Dalton's going to have time and he's going to be able to make plays. The second reason I like it so much is Atlanta's schedule has been so brutal through the first 5 weeks. Open up the season against Pittsburgh. Week 2, Monday Night Football against the Eagles. Week 3, Sunday night against the Chiefs. Divisional game against the Saints. Then they had that thriller last Thursday night against the Bucs. They played 3 primetime games, a divisional game, the season opener. It's like they've had no room to really breathe the first 5 weeks of the season. Now they go on the road and they're playing arguably the worst team in football. I think this could very easily be a letdown spot for the Falcons. And then the third reason is the spread. The look-ahead line in this game was 3. Now it's all the way up to 6 because the Panthers look so bad against Chicago. Guys, the Falcons haven't been leading by 7 points at any point this season. And now they're laying 6 on the road. And we know how great big underdogs have been doing in the NFL this year. So I think a lot of people are going to look at this game, Atlanta, Carolina, and want nothing to do with it. But I think there's great value on the Panthers this week. I think there's a shot that they pull off the upset. So it's my favorite bet this week, fellas, Carolina.
There you go. Well, let's shift gears, if you don't mind, to college football. An interesting game. I'm really curious how you're going to break this thing down, because I'll tell you what, I am befuddled by K-State and Colorado. I look at that game right now, and I think to myself, you know, Colorado could win this game by 3 touchdowns, but so could Kansas State. I really don't know how to play this game. Right now, K-State's given 4 points. Over-under is 56.5. Would you tell me how to play this game? Because I'm not sure I know how to do it.
Guys, it's going to, can I tell you, like, honestly, outside of Oregon and Ohio State, I think this is the game I'm most looking forward to watching on Saturday. I think it's going to be, it's going to be that good. I really do. I think the environment there at Boulder is going to be awesome. Their offense, I mean, they can score, but it's their defense that's been getting better week after week after week. At the end of the day, it really all comes down to Avery Johnson and if he's able to make plays through the air, because Colorado's pass defense is gettable. And if he was able to make plays through the air, then I think K-State can have some success. I do think they're better, especially on both lines of scrimmage. And in a game like this, where the environment is going to be so good and it's a big game for both teams, at the end of the day, I think that's what it comes down to. Kansas State's ability to run the football. I trust their defense with a couple weeks of prep as well. So I would take K-State, guys. I'd lay the 4 with them. Honestly, I think it's going to be a really good game, but I think we all kind of wrote off Colorado early in the season because of how they finished last year, and it looked like their defense was the same old Colorado. Now they've won a couple games in a row against Baylor and UCF, two teams that I don't really think are all that great, and it feels like a lot of people now are jumping back on the Colorado bandwagon. They're playing one of the better teams in the Big 12, and I think Kansas State, I think they get the win. I think they cover. So it's going to be a great game. Can't wait to watch, but I'd take K-State.
And the over-under at 56.5 seems gettable to me, too. I think a little bit of shootout city, PJ. K-State's been selling out to stop the run against a lot of teams, and it's been effective for them, right? Drive-stopping plays on passing downs. If they do that again, Colorado's probably going to make big plays, and I think they'll still try to do it and allow that to happen, but try to get off the field with sacks and interceptions. So we're with you, man. We're very excited. We have had that one circled for a while. I'm kind of glad it's late. Just keep in mind what happened to K-State at BYU in that late night window. What else in the college slate has you intrigued? What are some of your favorite plays on Saturday?
Yeah, so I like USC plus the points against Penn State. It was at 5.5. Now it's down to 4.5. Guys, keep this in mind. In the Big Ten, obviously with these West Coast schools joining a bunch of these schools in the Midwest, we all wonder what that midweek travel would be like and what it would be like for these teams like Washington going to Rutgers or going to Northwestern, whatever it may be. So far this season, teams that have had to travel through time zones where there's a 2 or 3 hour difference, they're 1-7 straight up. And that's what Penn State faces this week when they have to go across the country to USC. So it's very real for these teams that obviously have to make some cross-country road trips. So I think just traveling across the country is going to be brutal for Penn State. I also like getting USC off of a loss against Minnesota. I think it's going to have them more prepared. It's going to have them more focused, ready to go. USC could be undefeated, guys. They should have beaten Michigan a month ago. They should have beaten Minnesota last week. So this is a team that very easily could be undefeated. If that was the case, I think this spread would be closer to like 2.5 or something like that. Instead, we're getting well over a field goal. So I like the Trojans. They're very good at home. This is by far the best offense that Penn State's going to see all season. And their defense, as we know, has been much improved. So I like that game. And then give me West Virginia plus the 3 against Iowa State as well. Morgantown's just one of those places that's really tough to place to play at night. I think they match up well with Iowa State. You know, the Cyclones know who they are. We talk about identity in football all the time. Iowa State wants to play defense. They want to run the football. They want to win the turnover battle. It's a very tough thing to do on the road at night in Morgantown. So I like West Virginia. I think they have the best player on the field in Garrett Green, their quarterback in that game. So give me the Mountaineers plus 3, USC plus 5.5, two plays I really like this week.
I've got a play.
All right,
for
PJ, you got one, Paul, real
just
quick.
Just real quick, Here's my play of the week, Vanderbilt and Kentucky. Vanderbilt getting 13.5 against Kentucky, Kentucky at home. I kind of like Kentucky in this, and it's a for sure deal because what a letdown it was. You know, you beat the number one team in the country, and you turn around and play, you're getting 13.5. That's not enough points, is it?
Paul, I absolutely love it. It's almost like the transitive property game, right? Like Vandy got Bama off the ultimate letdown after that game against Georgia, and now here's Vandy off of their letdown, right?
Bingo.
Against Bama. It's the same thing. That's why I loved Vandy last week, because that you knew Bama was going to have a letdown after that Georgia win. I mean, guys, I think they're still carrying that goalpost across Nashville. You know, they're still partying after that game. So I'm with you, Paul. I love Kentucky minus 13.5 as well.
Can't blame them for partying. We'll be partying up late Saturday night watching K-State. PJ, we appreciate it. Thank you for the time. Thanks for the tips. Let's all make some money.
Absolutely. Good luck, guys. Talk to you next week.
As the host of Send It In and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser, those insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. All right, let's start one of our text to win contests. We'll do HTO in the first hour today, and we'll do a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors for you. We'll do a free iced or hot coffee featuring free rain coffee for you. These are good for any of the three Wichita Metro locations, east, west, or in Derby. And you can win right now by texting the keyword TTEA to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. When we come back, Tommy will rejoin. So will our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. We sort of set the table for you from a betting perspective there with PJ. Now we'll dig into it in what should be one of the premier games of the week. I think the ratings on this thing are going to be high. I think all eyes will be on the Cats this weekend. We'll talk about it next with Tim Fitzgerald when Sports Daily rolls into hour number two.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Our three-man booth is about to become four as we get ready for Tim Fitzgerald a little bit later in the program here. So we'll get connected with Fitz as we make our way through. Fellas, we were talking there about the Royals, and let's do that for a second now here. As Glasser kind of likes the Royals as a home underdog, getting that plus money. That's been a fruitful bet. Real quick, before we get to Fitz, I would ask you, Tommy, are you in on that bet? I'm in on that bet. It's paid a lot of money this postseason.
I'm in on the bet, you know, for sure, just because, you know, their backs are up against a wall. They've got to get the victory, and so I'm down on that for sure. I think that that's a really good bet for tonight, you know, especially if we're just talking money line. I think that that's probably the way to go.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more as we make our way through the second hour. But let's make that three-man booth a four-man booth. We'll tell you that the IHOP hotline will open back up in just a few minutes at 869-1240. You can celebrate the weekdays with your new IHOP house faves. All your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. We do welcome in from GoPowerCat.com, publisher Tim Fitzgerald, joining the program as we get ready. Tim, we talked to our betting insider who is, you know, he does these shows all over the country. He's got a wide scope on these things. And he did say that, you know, right there along with the Oregon game, this was just from a fun perspective, his favorite game of the week. I agree with that. This should be a really fun game Saturday night. Hopefully, right, more fun than the last time the K-State team played at a 9:30 Saturday night window.
Yeah, late night football, mountain time zone, in the mountains. What could possibly go wrong? I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah, you're right. And I think it's going to be more about mindset than, you know, for Kansas State to go out there and play well on the road, which they haven't done. So this team's got something to prove to itself as much as anyone else. So we'll see what happens. Colorado's a very confident program right now coming off that win at UCF.
You know, Fitz, the one thing about Colorado, regardless if they are good or if they are bad or if they are somewhere in between, we always know that there's a lot of noise, a lot of chatter. There's just, I mean, so much attention that is heaped on the Buffaloes program because of Coach Prime. Is there a conscious effort, do you think, from this K-State team to feel like they need to drown out any of that noise? And whether that is leading up to the game on Saturday or once you're actually in the middle of it, to just be able to focus on what you can control and try to tune everything else out?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of attention around this, and I think they do a pretty good job of that, actually. Tommy, I don't think this team has typically gotten distracted by outside noise, but, you know, I don't know.
When you look at K-State right now, I've got a question for you, Fitz. Just how important is a great game by DJ Giddens for K-State? Give me a sense of what does he need to get to for K-State to win this game?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime DJ goes over 100 yards, it usually means good stuff for K-State. And that's been pretty commonplace over the last, 10 games, 11, 12 games. So that's really where it starts and ends with K-State. Can they run the ball on Colorado? Colorado feels like it has a really good run defense this season. Maybe they do, but this is going to be K-State's challenge. They got to control that line of scrimmage. And the best way to stop Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, and all those offensive weapons is to make them stand on the sideline and watch you play football. I think K-State's running game is really going to set the tone for the rest of the game for the Wildcats.
Do you think, though, that they will do what they have done against some teams that where they really want to make sure they stop their own? Because Colorado didn't really run the ball, right? So K-State's inviting these teams to throw it on them, right? We know why. You get sacks, you get interceptions, you flip it around real quick. Colorado doesn't run it anyway, so they're not going to do. So I'm very curious to see what K-State does defensively, if they mix it up from what we've seen the last few weeks, because this is a pass-first offense. I mean, that's what they want to do. Is it? I mean, maybe it's like Arizona and what Arizona does. Do we take anything from there? I just am trying to find like a similar game script that we can follow on this one.
What Colorado actually had a run game a little bit at UCF, and that's what really made them dangerous. And maybe they've realized that now. They've got to establish some semblance of a threat on the ground before they can start throwing it all over the field. And they did that a little bit better in Orlando. But yeah, I mean, K-State's very common. Just take away the run game. That's what every defense coordinator wants to do. And if you're capable of doing that, it puts you at an advantage typically, but you're right. This team is accustomed to functioning without a run game. They've had struggles with that over the last year and a half until recently. And we'll see if that formula holds up. But yeah, I think some of the stuff K-State did against Arizona is a bit telling. The difference here being Arizona really had one guy you had to worry about, and Colorado's got about three guys in terms of receivers you got to worry about. The most important being Travis Hunter, who's probably the best receiver in college football, if not, or that kid at Alabama's one and two. This is a really talented team who has had some gaps and holes, and now those gaps and holes seem to be getting smaller. And this will be a really good test for Colorado as much as K-State.
Do you think, Fitz, that obviously there's been a lot that's been made of the return, or I guess quote-unquote revenge game for Dylan Edwards in this particular matchup? Do you think that's something that will be leaned into at all from a play-calling perspective, or is that more external that, you know, everybody wants to see Dylan have a big game against his former team, or do you think that they will deliberately try to find a way to get him even more involved in the offense?
Well, my theory is that Dylan needs to be on the field, not because he's going to be a great playmaker, but because everyone will be focused on him. And he becomes a really effective decoy just by his presence. Because if you played with him last year and you saw him transfer, there's no way you're not keeping an eye on him. One, you know how dangerous he can be. But number two, you don't want him to have a big night against you. I don't think in terms of the locker room or anything, his return's a big situation. But I do think it can be an impact on the field. But this doesn't change much my opinion on him at all. I mean, I've thought K-State needs to get him on the field, whether they let him touch the ball or not. And I think we've seen that have a great impact on defenses when they just kind of overload with trying to stop all those weapons.
You know, Fitz, I'm going to make a confession to you. I mean, I wouldn't do this for anybody else on the radio, but because it's you, I'm going to. Last year, I had a man crush on Coach Prime. I think America had a crush on Coach Prime. This year, not so much. This year, I don't have that same man crush. But I can tell you this, I think I think the potential for Colorado is still better than it was last year. This could end up being a very good football team. And how much fun do you have watching Travis Hunter? That kid is amazing.
Yeah, Coach Prime is Coach Prime. You know, he just it's who he is. Nobody's going to change him. You know, don't even bother asking. And you know, he's gonna argue about the meaning of words with media, and they're gonna ban media members. And you know, there's some flaws in the system, I would say, with Coach Prime. But overall, if you look at it from the big picture, the football team's improving, and the university has absolutely exploded in popularity with enrollment and all those other things that come with his presence. It's absolutely incredible what just hiring him has done for the University of Colorado in terms of both enrollment and revenue for merchandise. Their TV ratings are through the roof. He's an intriguing story. He's a really intriguing character, because we haven't seen someone like this before that comes out and says, you know what, I know what the guidelines are to be a coach. I'm going to do it differently. I think it's kind of cool. You should stop and go find what he said about Dylan Edwards at this week's press conference. And I think it'll kind of soften up the edges on what you see from Coach Prime.
What did he say? What is the synopsis of that?
He's not upset with him at all. You know, he loves the kid. He's known him his whole life. And, you know, he doesn't mind kids when they leave, as long as they do it the right way and handle it, you know, in an adult manner. And then leave and focus on what they've got to do at the next stop and not keep talking about Colorado. And Dylan's done it the right way. So I'm glad to know that they're, you know, basically lifelong friendship or connection, you know, Dylan's life, hasn't faded because of the transfer. And I think that's really good.
Fitz, I want to have you predict something here real quick. Tommy. So, no, this is a simple one. So we've seen every week Avery Johnson has thrown the ball more each game. 21, 23, 23, 28, 31 in attempts. Feels like this needs to be the game that trend continues, right? That's how Colorado beat UCF. They cut the UCF going into that game was averaging like something absurd, like 375 yards on the ground a game, and they cut it in half. I think this is that if you're ever going to make an Avery throw first game plan, this feels like the one to do it.
I don't necessarily agree. I think KC needs to try to establish that.
Well, they're going to run the ball, but throw it more than 31 times. I think you might need to in this game.
I got to tell you, as I look back at that UCF game, I'm just not sold that UCF's run game was ever that good. I mean, I think it's good. Don't get me wrong, and I think Colorado did a nice job, but I think those stats were gaudy as based on some of the opponents they played. And they just kept running the ball and running up those numbers. And it was impressive, but it was kind of fool's gold too. I think K-State's probably got to be a run-first team, but I also think if they fall behind at all, those passing numbers will go up. And if Avery settles into a groove like he did against Oklahoma State with the run-pass combination, they'll open that offense up. They're going to be cautious at first because he's had problems on the road, and we'll see how this shakes out.
I think following up on that, Fitz, my question that I was going to mention before was really about Avery and how, whether it's fair or not, there's going to be this comparing and contrasting on Saturday night between Avery and Shedeur Sanders. And, of course, with what we've seen Sanders do really this season, and he's been the big offensive key. And I know Travis Hunter is the best wide receiver in college football, but really it's been Shedeur that has propelled their offense forward this season. So that's going to be talked about, I'm sure, a lot during the game and comparing both of those guys. For Avery, I know that that's not something that he's going to be thinking about. But is there something that you want to see from him that, you know, when the game is all said and done, maybe not even necessarily for people to say, oh, yeah, Avery is better than Shedeur, but maybe more like Avery is one of the top quarterbacks in college football alongside Shedeur?
Yeah. Once he kind of relaxes and does his thing, I mean, mixes in that run with the throw, he just becomes so dangerous. Shadur is an amazing quarterback because he can function without an offensive line. He basically had to do that last year. He was constantly running for his life, trying to throw the ball. And I think that made him really good at operating under pressure. He went through a whole year of running for his life and still being effective as a quarterback. I think that's pretty tantalizing. And now Avery has to kind of prove the same thing, that when they come after him, they're going to pay a price. And that's kind of what this battle's about in many ways. Can the quarterbacks make plays in the face of pressure?
You know, Fitz, I guess, you know, Jacob touched on something that makes me think, gives me pause, and that is playing in the mountains, playing at night. The last time K-State played at 9:15 at night, it didn't go so well, and that was also in the mountains. What's K-State doing to overcome? I mean, if this is a problem for this team, which I don't know if it is, it may not be, I don't know. But are things being handled a little differently for a kickoff at 9:15 at, what, 5,500 feet elevation?
I don't know. I'm not necessarily thinking that what happened at BYU is time-related, other than the fact that it just all the chances all just fell to, you know, all the odds fell in BYU's favor, that DJ Giddens has now lost one fumble in his entire career. It was at BYU. K-State gave up a 91-yard punt return off of muff punt, and they don't do that, but it was at BYU. And there was just kind of this convergence of bad things. I don't think it was necessarily time-related. But with that said, we're not really certain, because they were kind of knocked out by halftime, or at least early in the second half. So they didn't really have to play meaningful football late at night, if you know what I mean. They were kind of done by the time it got really late. So it's going to be interesting. Mostly it'll be interesting for me, because as you guys just saw, I slept in today. I'm trying to adjust my clock. Stayed up late. I'm preparing. I think Coach Kleiman understand that I'm getting in my reps.
Now, are you going to the mountains again, Fitz?
Oh, yeah. I'll be heading out there tomorrow at this time. We're going to depart at 10 a.m. and get on down the road and get out there so we can sit around all day Saturday and watch college football.
You know, Boulder, Colorado is known for some things. So
it's at altitude. Apparently they got buffaloes just roaming around. That's what I think it's known for.
I would have thought the Rockies would have been rockier.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that John Denver,
he's full of something.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Well,
good luck with all of it, all of the joys of being out in the Colorado mountains there, Fitz. What do you guys have going at GoPowerCat.com for us?
We're back into, you know, it's great having game week because it kind of constructs itself. The PowerCat pregame podcast is up right now. We'll have the Friday walkthrough. We've got plenty of VIP stuff for our customers that are behind the paywall. Just our settled into our weekly game week coverage, and it's a lot of fun. It's all laid out right now at Go Power Cat.
Go check it out. You can follow him on social media at Life of Fitz, GoPowerCat.com. All the best K-State coverage. Fitz, we appreciate it. Safe travels. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. I appreciate his contributions always to the program. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. A lot of golf out there. A lot of great menus. I saw, Tommy, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to swing it, the menu special this week, by the way, for Crestview. I always like to look at those. Let me pull this up here real quick. How good does this sound? Now, I don't know if you're a fish guy, but it is a blackened swordfish with mango salsa served with coconut rice and vegetables.
I like Bring that. It on. I'd be down for that.
Hey, I'm
really
down
good.
For it, too. Lunch today, I've taken on you. Lunch today, come on. Yeah, I'm ready to go.
On Savage. Yeah, lunch on Savage.
that kind of switched on me, didn't it?
Yeah. All right, so that's there. The great restaurant, great bar. We appreciate Crestview for their support of the program. All right, when we come back, we're gonna talk a little more Royals, fellas. Let's look ahead to game four. We've gone through game three. It's in the trash can. It's on to game four now. Trying to get this series back to New York. We gave you a bird's eye look at it. We'll dig in deeper when we return on Sports Daily.
And 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily on KFH. Glad to be here with you on this Thursday. We've had back-to-back guests, so we'll open the IHOP hotline back up for you right now, 869-1240. You can leave us your video comments as well. And we'll set up our Wichita Thunder hockey ticket giveaway. They're back, home against Kansas City, Friday, October 18th, next Friday. KFH wants to hook you up with some tickets. To enter, just text the word THUNDER right now to the number 20357 for your chance to win a pair of tickets from us here at KFH. Message and data rates apply. That's THUNDER to 20357 for a pair of tickets to the home opener. Welcome back in, fellas. Tommy, you just sent me this, and now my brain is racked. So we'll get to the Royals in just a second. Tommy just sent me something. I guess Oklahoma State concert to raise money for NIL, headlined by Cross Canadian Ragweed, Turnpike Troubadours, Jason Boland and the Stragglers, Stonely Roof. Basically, you know, my wheelhouse of growing up, the kind of, so it's like a perfect fit, by the way, and it's been a wild success. I guess they've raised millions of dollars. Every school across the country ought to be doing things like this, but a perfect fit for the fan base. And we're sitting here with 30 seconds, like trying to like make light of like where, what, okay. So if we know that, like, if you're trying to like fit the perfect, you know, type of music and bands to a certain like stereotype of what a school is, you could basically cherry pick that exact concert and put it in Manhattan for K-State. And it'd be what would you bring to Lawrence? I said the Grateful Dead. Like I'm trying to like, what concert would you do to like fit the stereotypes of the fan base?
It would be a singer songwriter. I think combo, like a lineup of just everybody like that
Bob
is like,
Dylan.
Yeah, like a Bob yeah. Dylan, you know, maybe like a, like Bob Marley was still alive.
I thought of Bob Marley.
I mean, like one of the sons, like Ziggy Marley could perform, like that would probably do pretty well.
Right. You would think.
I'd be down for that.
Yeah. I was thinking 311. They played Lawrence 311, quite a bit.
That'd be good. Oh. Yeah.
Yep. I've seen 311 a few times, and a few of those times have been interesting. I love 311. That's a good genre too. Like lit or, you know, that, Third Eye Blind, like, you know, whatever we were listening to when we were wearing hemp necklaces.
I could see the Dave Matthews Band drawing well in Lawrence. Yeah. That would be a good show.
Yeah. We'll have to, maybe that's a fun game sometime. What a good idea though. Seriously, every school across country ought to do this, because if you're the bands, and you want a great atmosphere that'll sell out and do all that stuff, these kinds of little festivals, that would be a blast.
You bet it would.
Good on Oklahoma State for being ahead of schedule on that.
By the way, speaking of NIL, real quick before we get to the Royals, Juju Watkins, did you guys see about her contract? Signed a big deal. Now listen, she's in college. She's at USC. Now, of course, she's probably now without Caitlin Clark in women's college basketball, she's probably going to be the face. Tommy, don't you think Juju Watkins will probably end up being the face of college basketball this coming year? I think that would be the case. Nike signed her to a reportedly multi-million dollar deal for NIL while still at USC, and that's pretty.
And Gatorade, I guess I'm seeing. So here's why I think that's really smart, and I was surprised that Caitlin Clark's shoe deal. I feel like that's the next frontier for women's basketball is shoe deals, and I say that because I coach my daughter's basketball team. One of them, I know how much the sport is exploding. Why wouldn't you have their favorite athletes on your shoes if you were a shoe company? I mean, Caitlin Clark should have been one of the bigger shoe deals we've ever seen, in my opinion. I didn't think it was big enough, but that's a good honor. Good honor. It's the new frontier, and get out there and make your money. But anywho, let's talk a little Royals here, fellas. Let's get predictive with this. We talked at the base level. We like the money line tonight. I do think it's in this team's DNA to not overthink this moment. I think, you know, not having any expectations helps, certainly. But also the personality of its two biggest stars, I think, feeds into that to some degree. Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, certainly Salvador Perez. I think this has a chance to be a big Salvi game, by the way. I think if Bobby Witt Jr. has one of those epic historic games, it'll come in a game five in New York. I think this is a salve game to me. And I think the Royals will take it back to New York. And I think that's where Bobby Witt has his big moment.
You posed the question in the first hour about if the Royals are built to feel pressure. And, you know, I think that generally speaking, sure, like you're going to feel pressure just because of the stage that it is. Anybody is going to, it's natural to feel that. But anything like above that or beyond that, I'm not sure that, that's the case. Yeah. Because I think that it's pretty clear that the Royals have felt like they're playing with house money. I know that's kind of a cliche coming to this time of the year, but with the way that the regular season ended, and it wasn't great for Kansas City, if we all recall that, I think that there was a moment where they probably felt fortunate to even be in the playoffs because it wasn't confirmed. It wasn't clear until the very end that they were even going to make it in. They played loose. They played free against Baltimore. That's why they swept them in the wild card round. And then in this round, I have not seen outside of individuals, like I mentioned Vinny Pasquantino earlier in the show, individuals I think are pressing a little bit that maybe are not performing up to standards. But I don't get the sense that that's an overall team. Like, I don't think the team is pressing necessarily. I just think it's kind of individual contributors. So I'm not super concerned about, you know, the them feeling this pressure that might be paralyzing or crushing or impact the way that they play tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the way they're built. Paul, you've been in locker rooms forever. I do think there's a difference when you are the underdog in these situations. And house money is a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. The Yankees are not playing with house money. The Phillies were not playing with house money. The Dodgers will not be playing with house money.
That's right.
There is intrinsic pressure on the expectations of those teams going in. Mm-hmm. There's not a person on the planet who wouldn't say this has been a wildly successful season, who would say they are any kind of, I mean, you might be disappointed that the season ended, but this is a Cinderella story, and let's not forget it. And this team is a Cinderella team, and it fits, right, Paul? Like that does, and that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean they're going to beat the Yankees because of that. Sometimes the better team or the better team on paper just wins and they build up to their own pressure. But as we look at this one, the Royals are sort of built for moments like this to have their back. They had their back up against the wall in that game last night. Mm-hmm. When the Yankees went up 2-0, that was a great opportunity for the Royals to crumble. And they didn't. Mm-hmm. They bounced back in a 2-out rally and got those runs right back. And yeah. I think that's sort of a microcosm of what this team is, bigger picture.
Right. And there's a lot of factors in this game that you might think, well, they'll come into play. But you're right, because they're playing with house money. I like that phrase because I think that's apropos to the situation. You know, you're playing in the house that Ruth built. Well, it's not the actual house, but you get my drift. New York is a tough place to go. It's a great environment. The place is going to be sold out. There's no question about that. And it all comes down to two players. We talked about this a little bit in the first hour. It's going to come down to two players, I think, that for the Yankees. If Juan Soto and Aaron Judge have great games, it's going to be a tough situation for the Royals to overcome. But so far, so good with those guys. I mean, Soto's had his good moments, but you know, you shut those guys down for most of the game, and you have a shot. And that's what the Royals are thinking. House money, baby.
I think
it's house money.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I've thought about a lot going into this game is there have been comparisons most of the season between the 2014 Royals team and this year's Royals team. And I think that you can make another comparison here, because if you recall, when the Royals made that run to the World Series and ultimately lost to the Giants, every team or most of the teams that they faced in the postseason, they were, you know, the opponent was expected to win that series. Now, ultimately, the Giants did, but the pressure was on the Giants. I mean, remember, like, they had won 2 years before. They had won 4 years prior to that.
They were winning every
other year. They were winning every other year in the World Series. And so the expectation was that the Giants would just continue to do that. And in even years in the 2010s, that's what the Giants did. So the expectation was on them to win the World Series. They did. It was a situation where the better team on paper won. And we're talking World Series versus World Series versus the ALDS. Like it's different, you know, altogether. But there are some other comparisons here where, you know, each team that the Royals would be facing up against in the postseason probably have larger expectations than what the Royals had going into this year. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that that is a comparison because that was the same way that it was 10 years ago. But then, of course, remember what they did the very next year. So again, I'm not saying that it's a foregone conclusion that Kansas City gets bounced tonight or that they lose in Game 5. I mean, that we could be having another week plus of Royals baseball, even longer than that, potentially. They've got to get these next two games, but if they don't, I think that it won't be because they crumbled under pressure, because I don't think that that overwhelming pressure exists. I think the better team on paper beat them.
Right. It might be because Garrett Cole is Garrett Cole.
Right.
And Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge.
And Giancarlo Stanton last night was Giancarlo Stanton.
Who again, one of the best postseason hitters of this generation, gotcha last night. Okay. Not a huge deal. I agree with that. I think the other thing I think about with this team is, and it is a good comparison to look at 14 and 15, because 14 was less out of nowhere than this year has been. I actually really like that team. That was right when I moved here, was in the middle of that baseball season. I was kind of big on them before. So they weren't without expectations that year like they are this year. But I do think there was a fear that that was like a one-year wonder kind of thing, and clearly it wasn't. And it wasn't even just those 2 years. It was probably about 4 years. This team, I think, is equipped, and from what we've seen out of the front office and ownership, I think you could have some confidence as Royals fans. This is not a one-and-done thing. Like that sense of desperation doesn't need to be there either. This is a team that could be right back here next year. Again, don't put the cart before the horse. Right now, you got to go beat Garrett Cole at home in a game. I want to ask you guys this. Jazz Chisholm, you know, he had his lucky comments. You know, he said the team was lucky basically at the end of the game. And the Royals fans got after him last night, which is incredible. He said after the game, I ain't never seen anybody boo a bum. I loved every single second of it, which he's right. Like, he's absolutely correct in that sentiment.
Have you looked at his stat line in this series? I mean, I'm not calling him a bum. I mean, overall, Jazz Chisholm is a really good player. But, right. I mean, he hasn't really produced in this series, so maybe a bum in the last four games or three games.
I hope they're not poking the bear with him either. That also scares me a little bit. But I love that that has creeped into this, because it just kind of adds a little bit to that. I had people text me that aren't from – they were like, why is everybody booing Jazz Chisholm? Like, what is this beef with Jazz Chisholm? And I'm like, it's a – you know, it's kind of a postseason intensity, but I love it. I love that it's there. It'll stay there today. And it adds to the flavor, gives you a little of the flavor of that Padres Dodgers series that seems to have all the drama right now.
And don't forget
a little bit of it.
Don't forget, by the way, if you go back to before the trade deadline, there was a lot of smoke that the Royals were going to trade for Jazz Chisholm, and that didn't happen. I mean, everybody wanted Chisholm on the Royals. And so I, you know, that may have something to do with it as well.
Yeah. By the way, I love your comparison with the Dodgers and the Padres right now. Sort of this is the same thing. I mean, you got the juggernaut New York Yankees and the best baseball record in baseball with the Dodgers taking on the Padres. It's kind of a similar deal. These are the two games where you've got an underdog.
But the Padres had big expectations coming into this year.
Yeah, but they're still facing the best baseball team in you know, by record. The Dodgers
team money can buy, right?
I don't agree,
by the way, that the Dodgers are the best baseball team. They have the best lineup. They have the best pitching.
Well, okay. Well,
yeah, no, I know. But when we're talking about, like, best postseason team, I don't think that that's – I think their pitching is a problem. And, like, if they matched up against the Yankees, for instance, I think they'd have problems. The Yankees are really good. Austin says on YouTube, put $20 on the Royals money line, Salvi 2+ hits, Walker 5+ strikeouts. I like where your head's at, Austin, on that. I'd be a little cautious with Walker's 5+ strikeouts. The Yankees are strikeout prone, yes, but I think Cutrero is showing us a really short leash.
Yeah, how long is Walker going to pitch? I mean, if he was going to pitch 5 or 6 innings, then yeah, okay, 5+ strikeouts, I get that. But if he goes 3 or 4, that's going to be tough. And then on top of that, I mean, I don't mind the Salvi prop. 2 hits, I'd be, if it was a 1+ hit.
So here's, I like the 1+ hits, RBIs,
yeah,
runs.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go to two, give yourself those options. That way, if he has an RBI single, you're there.
Yeah.
But
or if he walks, and he gets on base and he scores a run.
Right. And I did learn, by the way, and I learned a hard lesson that when you see the bases props in there, walks do not count for that. That cost me a big bet. I did not know that. And I was madder than hell at that. And I think it's bogus and total crock, but that is the case. Be careful with that one. It'll be good. And again, if Walk is pitching in the fifth inning of this game, I think it's a really good sign for the Royals. If he is out there as the fifth inning starts, I think you've got good things happening for the Royals in this game.
That's going to be the absolute key, is watching how long he can pitch and how successful he is in the first few innings of the game. Because if they can get 5+ innings out of Walker, then at that point, more than likely, there won't be a need to go to Cole Reagans. That won't probably even be a thought.
I think it's just 4+.
And if the Royals can win and Walker goes 5+ innings, 4 to 5, longer than that, you have an off day on Friday. You go to New York on Saturday. You're not going to probably, because I mean, it's not ideal. The Royals threw like, what, 9 pitchers last night? Like, it's not ideal. I think the term that Costas used was like all hands on deck, and that's definitely what it has been for the Royals from a pitching perspective. You get to kind of reset that bullpen a little bit with the day off, the travel day going to New York, and knowing that if Walker pitches well and he's able to exit with the lead, you may not have to lean on your relievers quite as much as you had to last night.
I think that they'll still be prone to use them quickly. But I agree with you. The Friday thing makes everybody available again, except Reagans. And I don't even know if Reagans is an option. I have no idea. I haven't looked or skimmed through the post-game quotes to know. And probably Quatraro wouldn't even tell us if he was. But I would think he would be in an emergency. This feels like a game where you may see multi-innings out of Urcic, who did not pitch last night, right? And who gets a day off tomorrow. He's probably a come-in-the-eighth inning option, I would guess, in this game, which is good. That opens up your possibility.
I bet Quatraro will, if they're in a position for this, Quatraro will use Urcic in the same way that Aaron Boone used Luke Weaver last night.
Absolutely.
Get the 5-out save. That's the way that they would utilize him tonight.
And I wouldn't be scared to use Bubic again. I know he went multi-innings in game two, and then he pitched again last night, but there was a game off, or there's a day off between there. I wouldn't be afraid to use him again. So if you're willing to use Bubic again, and you know Urcic can go two, that's 3 innings. Now you're down to 6, right? If Walker can get you into the fifth inning, which means he's completed 4, they'll be fine. They'll be just fine. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Albrock, Savage, Caster. We'll have more Sports Daily right after this. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Albrock, Caster, Savage, glad to be here with you on this Thursday. Coming up tomorrow, by the way, we've got some special in-studio guests, Adam and Jessica Hadwin. PGA golfer Adam Hadwin, who spends half his year now in Wichita, is a Wichitan. He and his wife have a big event coming up here. What are we looking at, Tommy? A couple of weeks away?
Yeah, coming up on October 27th. It's the Hadwin Family Foundation. And actually, so some news here, they're now permanently in Wichita.
Oh.
So not even just half of the year. They're here all the time now, which is really cool living here. And so they've got a big charity event called Tees for Tots that is at Topgolf on October 27th. And so we're looking forward to talking to them.
That's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. So just tune in for that tomorrow. They'll be in studio and they have that event. We'll have the details on that coming for you tomorrow as well. He had a really good year. He was in a lot of tournaments last year. That I love that. You know, when we've got local golfers to follow along with the PGA Tour, kind of gives you a little incentive to tune in each and every week. So that interview will come for us tomorrow.
Sounds like maybe Royals, a guest,
go ahead.
A guest Friday football picker. What do you
think? Well, I mean, I didn't even think about that.
What if we just kind of held him over and well, let's just see if he knows anything about football.
It's kind of like a college game day. You got the celebrity pickers coming in.
You're starting like to think like I'm thinking. Yeah. That a boy, Tommy. Good. What do you guys think? Well, bouncing off
we'll
of
see.
Tomorrow, you big wigs.
We'll
do
see.
That.
We'll see if we can push some buttons here. See if that Canadian knows anything about football. We'll put the challenge out. But more of those picks coming tomorrow. I'm on a heater, boys. I don't know what the numbers were last week. I can't ever remember who I picked. I just know my wallet's been good. I hope it continues tonight with Thursday Night Football. Real quick with Thursday Night Football. Tommy, you weren't here with PJ. I think this is one that it's one to watch because the Chiefs get the Niners next week and they're kind of reeling a little bit. But I think it's one where the props are going to be good. I don't know if I like it to go over 49, but I like a lot of yards in this game. And I say that because I think we're seeing that trend start to happen in the NFL where the defenses were way ahead to open up. It does feel like offenses are catching up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that that's the case. And I know that the Seahawks have they feel a real opportunity here. I mean, knowing that they're 3-2, they get the 49ers when the Niners are dealing with significant injuries and have underperformed because of that. And so I think that you look at this from Seattle's perspective of, hey, it's a divisional game early on where there could very well be, you know, the Niners can get back to full health presumably fairly soon. I don't know what the overall status is of Christian McCaffrey and what that looks like long term for him and all of that, because I know there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding him. But the Niners, it's kind of, you know, unfortunate, I guess, from their perspective that this is when they face the Seahawks. The Seahawks can absolutely win this game. I think that they've shown that with some of the skill positions that they've got, especially at wide receiver, if Geno Smith has a good night tonight, I definitely think there's a real possibility that the Seahawks can win this game.
I think there is, but I like the Niners. I saw yesterday that the Seahawks have a ton of injuries defensively. We know about all the injuries to the Niners. That's kind of like, it's kind of why I like the offenses in this game. But we'll see. The Niners are 2-5. The Bengals are 1-6.
Two and three.
The Bengals are 1-4.
Yeah.
I would still consider both of those teams Super Bowl contenders. I think they're sort of the poster children of each conference's teams that don't just not ready to count them out yet.
Maybe the
like
Niners.
Dallas. I'll count Dallas out. Dallas ain't doing it.
You ever look at the stats of the teams that make the playoffs that are 1-4? Like it's very, very, very slim that the Bengals can even make the playoffs. Not because that they're, you know, I think that they could be playing better 2 months from now than they are right now, but they've dug themselves
they
a hole
get there.
That historically right. It's been really hard for teams in the NFL to get out of to make the playoffs. So yeah, if they make the playoffs, sure. Like they could go on a run, no doubt about it, but I'm not even ready yet to say that they could make the playoffs. I don't think they're a contender at all.
I know. And you know what's so crazy about that too is I think about those 1-4 starts. We got to remember a stretch too. There was a stretch last year. Well, there was definitely a stretch where the Chiefs would have been 1-4. After their bye week, they came out of the bye week and went, I think 1-4.
Not to start the season though. Like that's the.
Well, that's what's so crazy about it. When I see things like that, and then I think I'm like, man, teams have rough stretches, but it does seem harder to overcome if it happens for whatever reason. If it happens early in the season, and like Cincinnati, think about who they've played in that stretch too. Like their schedule's been brutal. In this week against the Giants, they're only 3.5-point favorites against the Giants. So I don't know. I don't know.
Are
what
you
to
counting
do
this Giants game as a brutal part of a brutal stretch for them? Because
no, I'm not. I'm saying I can't believe they're only 3.5-point favorites. I'm saying they finally get an opportunity to. Now their defense has been really, 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 really
that's,
bad.
That's
and
why
that may be their favorite.
That's
flaw.
Why they're only 3.5-point favorites because that defense has completely fallen off a cliff. What used to be, you know, one of the best defenses in the NFL has been really terrible this year.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, one of the things too about the 49ers, since that's the game tonight, one of the things that appear to me to be the problem, of course, obviously, is an injury to McCaffrey. That's a huge problem. Changes everything about him. Now, I'm sitting here trying to think, when was the last time I remember an injury having such a big effect? Now, I'm going to take quarterbacks out. Let's not count quarterbacks, because we all know that, you know, you get a top-notch quarterback injury that can change the way a team plays, wins, losses, the whole thing. But non-quarterback positions, when was the last time an injury like McCaffrey affected a football team? I'm sitting here trying to think. I'm not even sure I can think of a time. I'm sure there is. I'm sure there have been injuries to position players other than quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
man, but it's changed everything.
I think of like Saquon when he tore his ACL for the Giants. But like that changed everything for them.
And I don't have the exact number in front of me. Real quick on that. Jordan Mason's numbers through their first whatever it is, five games, are ahead of where McCaffrey's were last year through five games. I don't know what's going on with them, but I don't think it's that, because Jordan Mason's been really good. I mean, they've had a ton of other, and Debo's been out, Kittle's been out, they've had offensive linemen out, their defense is banged up. Just two teams we thought for sure were going to be Super Bowl contenders kind of stumbling out of the gates. What if the Niners don't win tonight?
I don't think they will. I like the Seahawks in this game a lot.
I just don't like all the injuries Seahawks have on defense this week. Man, it should be a fun one. I'm excited about Thursday Night Football. Put it right up there with the Royals. Here we go, boys. It's a good football, but it's a good sports night. We'll come back. We'll tell you about how you can hear some of these games next.